Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.
We are back, Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you're listening in Bloomington, check us out on 92.5. You can find us on catholicspiritradio.com and listen to all of our old podcasts. It's been a long summer. I have taken some nice vacations with the family. We're getting back into the swing of things here, and so we have a fantastic guest lined up as we get back into the school season and the fall season. I appreciate everybody listening to our reruns over the summer. I hope you enjoyed, maybe got a couple extra nuggets of ideas or information that you might not have caught the first time. So we are going to be back on a regular basis. We have a great set of guests lined up coming up for the next foreseeable future, for the next few months already. If you want to be on the program, we would welcome that. Also, again, you can get in contact with us at CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Today, Father Sterneman is with us. Father, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for asking me, Jason.
We're going to have a great conversation about church history, kind of through the eyes of Father Sterneman's coin collection and how it relates to our faith and some of the historical touch points of that faith. We've already looked at some of the coins here, and he's got quite the collection, so we look forward to having a more in-depth conversation and bringing some historical relevance to our faith. Father, how long, we've never met before, and so I don't really know your backstory. How long have you been a priest?
I've been ordained 23 years, Jason, and I've been in a lot of different assignments throughout my 23 years. I started out in Peoria for 2 years back in 95 to 97, and then I was placed at Alderman High School in Rock Island, as well as St. Pius X Church for a couple years. Then I went to historic St. Patrick's from 99 to 03.
Okay.
And that was my first pastorate at historic St. Patrick's. Then I was assigned to St. Louis Parish in Princeton, Illinois for 14 years.
Okay.
And then the bishop asked me to come back to historic St. Patrick's, as well as Holy Trinity, as well as St. Patrick's in Wapella. So it's my privilege to have been here for almost to the day, 1 year. So back in the Bloomington Normal area, it's great to be back.
Well, we appreciate your service here locally, and then obviously in the diocese at large. So
thank you.
Are you a convert, or you were raised Catholic, or?
I'm a cradle Catholic.
All right.
I'm the youngest of five boys. Mom and dad waited for the best for last.
Well, there you go.
That's what I'm still trying to convince my brothers.
Sure.
Of that. And I went through Catholic schools in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, where I grew up. And my parents, thankfully, still live. They're both 89 years old.
Oh, fantastic.
Still living on their own, so that's great. We watch over them pretty closely. And then I studied for a while with the Archdiocese of Dubuque, and then I realized it wasn't the best of fits, and so I looked around at other dioceses and found that Peoria was relatively close. And then at that time, the then Bishop Myers was drawing a lot of seminarians to this mid-Illinois diocese, and I said that's a great fit. So I began studies, transferred from the Archdiocese of Dubuque to the Diocese of Peoria, and then finished up in 95 and was ordained.
I guess I'd never really thought about that. I mean, so the bishop is kind of like your boss, and every culture is going to be a little bit different, one diocese to the next. And so,
yeah, it's somewhat paralleled, Jason, with that of a guy or a woman looking for a religious order. It's not exactly the
sure.
same, but there are some similarities.
Cool. So when did you get into coin collecting?
Kind of as a child. I saw my dad's collection and my grandfather, who had a collection of coins from throughout the world, because he worked for Caterpillar Tractor as an ag engineer, and he did a lot of traveling all over the world. And so he had this very elaborate, very interesting coin collection, and I'd look at all these foreign lands and get interested in the antiquity of his coins, and then the breadth of his coins throughout the entire the world.
Yeah, I find it interesting, just as we were having a conversation earlier. You know, I think a lot of times, especially for just Catholics who maybe don't do a ton of historical church research, for me anyway, I think it seems that we get into the idea that we as Catholics, or our faith, is somehow disconnected from history. And we have our faith, and I think a lot of times we don't associate that with, you know, when we watch the History Channel or whatever, and we see the Romans or the Greeks, we watch different programs. And I think a lot of times we don't draw those, to your point, the touchstones of history and our faith together. And so I think it's amazing the short conversations that we've already had, and how, you know, we're really tied to the history of the world through the Catholic Church.
Exactly.
And that there's two sides to that. There's our faith, but then there's also just the history of the church, the history of the other dynasties and things around us. And so,
yeah, God has revealed himself within the context of history, you know, originally to his chosen people of the Old Testament, and then God entered into history physically and in the person, in the flesh. And that's exciting to think about, of having be able to collect coins that are very very much the time frame that God entered into human history in the flesh. And then all the different historical points and trials and tribulations of his bride, the church, throughout the different dynasties and empires and individuals and states and governments and movements and political rivalries and so forth and so on. It's just fascinating to me. And it makes to be collecting the coins, you have a physical manifestation or a physical evidence and it makes it more real. It realifies our faith a little bit more, that these individuals, including Jesus himself, are very much involved in the reality of our history. And he affected individuals' lives and, of course, wants to and earnestly desires to affect each and every one of us individually as persons, as human persons, to draw us into that relationship with him. And in the meantime, he has that that profound influence on Western culture, especially, and how he influenced the hearts and minds of individuals, including that of some of my coins here, as shown by my coins, some of the shakers and movers, the leaders of these empires, and individual saints that I have as well, collecting them over the years.
Yeah, I've liked to listen to Steve Ray on YouTube. And one of the things that he really talks about, and again, kind of going back to your point about realifying our faith, it's difficult a lot of times for us in, you know, especially in America, to sit and we learn our faith, hopefully better than we should, but we learn it. We read the Bible, but it's taken out of context for us because we're not, you know, 2,000 years ago Jewish folks that would have understood the things in a different light. In a different context. And I know one of the videos that I really enjoyed that Steve Ray put out on YouTube was a video where he talks about the conversation between Jesus and Peter about him being the rock. And he talks about the geography of where that conversation took place in front of this massive granite rock up in northern Jerusalem.
And I've been there.
Yeah, so, and that's what I was going to say. So for a lot of us, we don't get those opportunities, or we don't see those types of correlations between, you know, biblical context and the geography or the times, and in your case, the other empires and the tangible monies that, you know, really help to tie those ideas and those historical events together. So I know one of the coins that we had looked at already was the widow's coin.
The widow's mite.
The widow's mite.
Yes.
And so, biblically, this would have correlated to the woman and her that swept her house, correct?
That's right, right. And it relates to that of Pontius Pilate, and of course, the widow's mite, actual piece of money itself, is about half the size of a dime, a U.S. dime. It's probably a fourth of the size of a U.S. dime, and it very much relates to that of the biblical story that Jesus illustrates, the giving from our hearts, the giving of ourselves, and the widow who gave two widow mites, two mites, I should say, would have given all from her resources. And so she was, of course, it manifests her trust that God will provide for her.
I told John that we would have to take some pictures and put them on Facebook so that folks, when they listen, can check us out on Facebook and see what some of these coins look like. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I'd say it's like the size of a contact lens. And so, you know, we hear the story of her sweeping the house trying to find it, and it's absolutely, I mean, it would be extremely difficult. And I think a lot of times today, again, kind of going back to that historical perspective and, you know, how we view the world today, I guarantee you could find at least $2 worth of change in my couch. So the idea, right, that somebody, you know, swept the house looking for what amounts to about the size of a contact lens, for me, it's like, well, we lose change all the time.
Right.
In fact, anymore, and I have, you know, five children, and they are fascinated with money all the time, and they take it and they play with it and everything else. And so the other day there was like $2 $1 bills outside on the deck, just like laying around, and they'd been out there for like 2 or 3 days in the rain and everything. And so I think it's just that kind of perspective. Right. You know, when we look at this woman, this is what she had. And, you know, this was almost all of what she had, and she gave it to the Lord. Whereas today we look at coins a lot of times and we go, you know, it's a nickel or it's a dime. And,
right. You
know, I think that there's always that conversation too about, are we just going to get rid of pennies one day? Right. You know, they become less and less valuable, I think, for us as our culture goes. But the historical perspective, when we look back, they had a lot more value.
Yeah, and speaking more broadly, Jason, that of when we look at history, there's tons of lessons we can learn from them, whether it's the context of the monies and the individuals that played itself out at the time of Jesus or throughout these 2,000 years of the church's history. We can learn from different movements and thought processes, good and bad, of course, to apply them to the here and now, and to understand why we're at where we are as a culture, as a church, as a, I guess you could say, section of the world, and it really brings to the fore the influence of what past events took place, how they're now influencing where we are right now. That's one of the more interesting things to me. I like to connect dots, as it were, and coin collecting helps me connect dots. And like this led to this, and then that led to this, and then and so on and so forth. And you get a little broader picture of the importance of history and how it plays into our faith, our Catholic Christian faith that Jesus himself established 2,000 years ago.
I think one of the interesting points that you had made too about history is the In God We Trust. Mm-hmm. And you said you have one of the first coins that was actually stamped with In God We Trust, and you made the comment that, you know, today there's not anybody around today that was around before that existed on our currency, whether it be notes or coins. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us just assume, well, it's always been there. And in fact, that's not the case.
Right. This is about the size of a nickel, and it's made of copper, Jason. And it's a 2-cent piece issued by the U.S. government from 1864. And so it was the first time that In God We Trust was stamped on U.S. currency. And from that time on, almost without exception, we've seen that In God We Trust. I think sometimes as Americans, we wrongly believe that it's always been on our monies. But I think Abraham Lincoln wanted us to bring back to the reality of the influence of the Judeo-Christian tradition, that we do, in fact, have a God who revealed himself to us, and to, of course, the help out in that horrible experience we went through as a nation called the Civil War.
Sure, yeah, this would have been right at the end of the Civil War.
600,000 individuals perished in that war because of the disunity that was caused between North and South. And so this speaks to his innate, I would suggest, not only desire but also knowledge that God unites us. And I think that's one of the motivations he had, and others, obviously, in conjunction with him, the president at the time.
And so then going back maybe further in history, you said, what's the oldest coin that you have?
The oldest coin I have, Jason, is that of a Siglos, and it is made of silver, and it is about 480 BC to 460 BC, and it was issued by the third Persian king of Persia, and that was Darius. And Darius was the, I believe, was the grandson of Cyrus. Now, Cyrus is mentioned in the four of the Old Testament books, and Darius is mentioned in three of them, so by name. So the Judeo-Christian tradition very much recognizes that God is working in the context of the world and of individuals and empires and leaders, et cetera, et cetera. And so, of course, Cyrus was the one who freed the God's people, his original chosen people, from the tyranny of Nebuchadnezzar II in the context of the Babylonian captivity. And so it was not too many decades after they went into captivity that Cyrus, his grandfather, Darius, his grandfather, freed them from that tyrannical experience and brought them back to their homeland. So this is, and he continued, of course, grandfather's modus operandi, as it were, of continuing to free them, because it didn't happen overnight.
Sure.
Things happened a little slower back then.
Yeah.
We didn't have
24-hour news cycle.
Yeah, we didn't have
The Jews are freed,
great,
everybody.
Great things like Catholic Spirit Radio
sure.
Inform us instantaneously whenever we wish to know what's going on in our faith and in the world. So that's one of the things, as a side note, one of the things I have many interests, one of which is that of ancient mining, the mining of materials and how much labor intensity that would have been. And the fact that they would have to – it was completely manual labor, that they would have to dig various ores out of the ground, you know, dangerous, dangerous situations, and then to crush up the ore and then to separate it and then to smelt it down and to purify it and then to finally melt it to a point where you can stamp it, et cetera, that's a fascinating kind of
just
sidetrack.
Just to make one coin.
Yeah, and we're talking – you know, we didn't have mechanisms of machinery until – what the
well,
the
luckily,
early
1900s. Your grandfather helped with a lot of that.
He did. He actually helped people around the world
develop mining equipment.
How to use it, how to use it properly, the actual machines, and then also how to farm. So, being an ag engineer, he told them how to sow the fields and how to plow and how to reap the harvest, etc. And he was also, as a side note, interesting side note, in my opinion, especially, is that he was involved in Stalin's first five-year plan of the collectivization of farms. He was commissioned. He and three others were commissioned by the then communist government to collectivize to help in the farming of these collectivized farms. And he himself, along with three others, had to leave after about 2.5 years because they themselves were starving. And so this was, of course, in the late 20s. He left his family in Berlin, and he went into the heart of Russia. And so,
wow.
So my grandfather and others in my family have taken part in very significant historical events the 20th century in this case. Yeah.
A very quick 2.5 years and they're starving should lead to the idea that communism might not work out that well.
No, it does not. it has a regard for the collectivized individuals in a society, but it doesn't give due regard for the individual, him or herself. Therein lies the problem, that each individual is made in the image and likeness of God. And so it's a forced ideology upon everybody, and it does not respect the innate, inalienable rights that we have, among others, to private property.
And the church obviously has always, I believe, always taught against communism. One of the tenets of communism is basically, in order to get people into that collective mindset, you have to strip away that individuality, which a lot of that is religion.
Right. And it, yeah, that therein lies the looming other aspects of communism and probably most socialism's political structures, that it denies God revealing himself to humanity, for all of humanity. And at times it's it dances a little bit with religion, but for the most part, man's activities, mindsets, and cooperation become a religion, unfortunately. The creed, code, and cult, man becomes the center of his existence as opposed to a higher being, which, of course, we call God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a fantastic conversation. We're going to have to take a break. I look forward to hearing about the Judas coin when we get back. So you're listening to Catholic Spirit Radio on 89.5.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5.
Join Catholic Spirit Radio for a pilgrimage to the Shrine of Christ's Passion in St. John, Indiana on Saturday, September 22nd. You will feel as though you have been transported back to the time of Christ. The Shrine's Way of the Cross includes 40 life-size bronze figures placed in gardens that look and feel like the Holy Land. The $75 trip includes bus transportation, guided shrine tour, museum, church tour, gift shop, and lunch. Visit Catholic Spirit Radio for details and to register by August 31st. For questions, call Carolyn at 309-830-4164.
Batter up! This night guarantees to knock it out of the park. On Monday, August 20th, Father Adam Cesarek, former Loras College baseball player, will be the key presenter for a community-wide renewal night. Slide deeper into your faith by learning how to strike a joyful and divine intimacy with God. You don't have to be a sports fan to catch inspiration from Father Adam's Grand Slam presentation. Game on! August 20th from 7 to 8:30 at Holy Trinity Church, Bloomington. A reception follows for all Jesus fans.
Plan to attend a reception and private screening of the film Sexual Revolution, 50 years since Humanae Vitae, on September 22nd, 6 p.m. at St. Jude Parish, Hettinger Hall in Peoria. Experience the dramatic conversion story of Alana Newman, who was donor-conceived, and the parallel story of the doctors behind the pill and natural family planning. Alana and the director will be present afterwards for music and discussion. This event is offered in partnership with OSF Healthcare. Contact 309-370-2122 for reservations, $10 each.
We are back, Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. Check us out on CatholicSpiritRadio.com. If you haven't been listening, you've missed a fantastic segment with Father Sterneman on a little bit of his background and his coin collection. So I would encourage you to go back and listen to us on CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Check us out on Podbean or iTunes Radio. And we're going to have another conversation. We were talking a little bit in the break about some of the history of where these coins are, how are they preserved, how are they found? And I think that's good information for folks to have, because the coins that you have are, they look like they were minted yesterday.
Yeah, some of them, Jason, are in very good shape. Some of them have a lot of patina because most of them are bronze. The better quality ones are silver. I don't have any gold ones, by the way. On a priest's salary.
Neither does the American government anymore.
Well, that's true. But on a priest's salary, I don't have that much. But so I am very prudent and steward-like when it comes to purchasing coins. But as we were talking about during the break, Jason, I was explaining how does one come about in finding such wonderfully preserved coins? And a lot of the time, not exclusively, but a lot of the times in the ancient world, obviously there weren't banks where you could literally put your money, your intrinsically valued money, as opposed to that of what we have now, which is fiat currency. So they didn't have banks, so they had to preserve them. They had to, preserve their safety first and foremost. That's what they were concerned with. They would bury 50 coins of whatever, denarius, and I have some denarius as well, but and they would bury 50 of them or 100 of them or 200. And so, preserving them security-wise until later. Or they would go off to a distant land for a while. A distant land could be 20 miles away. We think of 20 miles as nothing. And so it would take them a long time to get there and to stay there. They'd come back 3 months later, and they would be preserved. But sometimes they didn't come back. And so then the passing of millennia or the passing of centuries, we have gas companies wanting to trench and put in gas lines, electric companies putting in, underground cables and water companies, et cetera, or a contractor who wants to dig a foundation. Lo and behold, they come across these hoards. We call them hoards of coins that were put there for the sake of safety. And so they come across 50 or 500 or even sometimes 5,000 if it were a wealthier individual. And therefore, they are very well preserved for the most part. And so the coin collectors, a big coin collecting company, would buy all of these, this hoard of coins. They'd clean them up, and it's somewhat of an arduous process to get some of the excess off of them, whatever they call that, I'm not sure. But and then they would put them on the market to sell. And so that's the beauty of supply and demand. You have a huge number of denarius from Tiberius or so forth, and now there's a large number of them, and so you can scoop in, the collector, the individual collector like myself, can scoop in and buy it for a very reasonable price. I mean, some of my denarius, which are about the size of a dime, a common man's pay for the day, or a soldier in the Roman army, that would be their one day's pay. And so anyway, they would be they're relatively well preserved and reasonably priced. I've gotten some for $15.
Oh, wow.
So more expensive on some of them, depending on how well they're preserved. So,
wow. So it's definitely something that the average person can get into collecting.
Oh, yeah, very much so. In fact, most of my coins I've purchased on eBay, and sometimes I will work with the person about a price, and sometimes they say yes, sometimes they don't.
Sure.
I don't have to buy their coin. Right. They don't have to sell it. So
sure.
It's a gentleman's agreement as to what the final price is.
So you had mentioned the Judas coin.
Yes. Now, the Judas coin is it's called the Judas Shekel Tetradrachma. And it's a fairly sizable coin, about the size of a U.S. quarter, a little bit thicker. And it was, as you recall, Judas received 30 pieces of this particular silver.
And you got one of the 30.
Well, no, I don't think so.
It could be, though.
No, it could not, actually, because this is a reproduction.
Oh, okay.
In decent shape, this is a very collectible, therefore high in demand,
sure, absolutely.
Therefore much more expensive. I don't have that kind of money. And so this is what was called a tetradrachma, a larger coin. This would be worth a lot of money. Exactly what in U.S. today's dollars, I don't know, but it would 30 silver pieces of this size would be a phenomenal amount of money.
Absolutely.
Thousands and thousands of dollars. And so as it's reported in the Gospels, Judas had a little greed problem he wasn't dealing with sufficiently. So it led him to other sins. That's what happens with sin, right? If we don't get at it and get serious about rooting it out of our lives, then it finds friends.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It grows.
Yes. So this is it's actually has Greek writing on it. And a lot of the Greek coinage, a lot of the coinage at the time, especially in and around that of Jerusalem, had both Greek and Roman, because the Roman Empire that was obviously in power at the time, they didn't want to go to the hassle and expense of retooling and reminting an enormous amount of Greek-issued coins. And so they just let them continue to play out as money. And so they were, I guess, wise in that way. But yeah, this is a has Greek written on it. So,
and the one of the other ones that I thought that was interesting, kind of going back to our conversation about history and large, you know, especially large historical events in our faith, was that of the coin that you had from Constantine.
Oh yes, it's interesting, Jason, that a lot of the Constantinian coins are relatively inexpensive. Now, one of the reasons being, or I should say the main reason for that to be, is that he ruled for so long, from 303 to 327 when he died. And so he issued an enormous amount of coinage. And of course, as a historical reference point, the reason why you almost without exception see the profile of your leader is that the common person would never see their leader. And so you would know by profile, which is a very individual, not quite as much as a fingerprint, but nonetheless an identifier for who your leader is. And then, of course, the name of the leader would also be on your coin. So you're beholden, individuals, to this particular individual, your leader. And so that would be one of the ways that, well, the people would know their leader.
Yeah. And then going back a little bit towards the time of the Judas coin, you had some others that were, I think, more around the time of Christ.
Yes. So this particular one is almost the size of a 50-cent piece, somewhere between a quarter and a 50-cent piece, probably about as thick as well. And this is issued by Tiberius, who was the adopted son of Caesar Augustus. And Tiberius, the adopted son of Augustus, he issued this in remembrance of his father, Augustus. Now, Caesar Augustus was at the time of Jesus' birth. He was ruling. He ruled quite a long time, from 27 BC to 14 AD. So that's a long time.
Yeah.
And so this says, Divus Augustus Pater, the divine father Augustus. And so he's issuing it in remembrance and for people to remember who his father was and, well, who started Pax Romana, the means by which we had a relative peace, not necessarily towards the church, but in the commerce world, in the ancient world, it was a time of relative peace. And so this was issued, of course, under the auspices of Tiberius Caesar, but it was issued by the Senate. So whenever you see on the back of an ancient Roman coin S and C, that means that it was issued by the Senate. And that, those were always bronze. The silver and the gold were always issued by the emperor himself.
Gotcha. So it seems like there's a lot of similarities from ancient coins to still what we kind of use today. It seems like a lot of times there's someone's figure on one side,
mm-hmm.
And then some type of country, you know, wording on the other side that signifies where it came from.
And in the case of my Greek coins and also especially my Roman coins, oftentimes one of their gods that was associated with that particular emperor or that particular time frame, or especially by way of victory. So Victoria, which is, I'm not talking Queen Victoria, but Victoria was one of the primary gods that they would issue on the reverse of the coin, the obverse part of the coin. The front, as it were.
So the head.
The head. The head. Therefore, the head would be put on it, the profile of the head of the leader very often. There would be exceptions, though. A current emperor, in this case, a current emperor issuing a coin in remembrance of his father. And so that would be, in this case, if it's very specifically a coin that's remembering his father, his father's profile is there on this particular coin.
So this would have potentially been from the Gospels when Jesus talks about rendering under Caesar with that which is his. So, something like
fairly
this.
Fairly close. It'd be a little bit later because Tiberius actually was the – that very much could be. Sorry, I lost track of my history. Tiberius was the Caesar, the emperor at the time of Jesus' death and resurrection.
I've always liked that gospel in that I think that it really puts the state in its place for Christians to acknowledge that we have laws that we have to adhere to, but that doesn't necessarily negate our responsibility as Christians.
Right, right. There's a twofold responsibility to our brothers and sisters in the secular world, or just simply around us, who have all sorts of different religious backgrounds as well as ideologies, but a basic respect for all of humanity, whether they share our Catholic Christian faith or not. And also, we help each other. It's a symbiotic relationship, isn't it? And through taxation and other ways that we really truly affect at what we say, think, and do, our brothers and sisters in our society.
Absolutely. Well, again, I really appreciate it. What other coins are your favorites? I see one over there with Christopher Columbus on it. Is that right?
Yes. This is, of course, a commemorative, so okay. It's not really a coin. To be a coin, it has to be issued by a sovereign government and have a value that's either printed on it or understood by its size and weight.
Okay.
That which is not issued by a sovereign government and that which does not have a numeric value on it, or is not an understood value, is called a commemorative.
So that'd be like when you see the infomercials at 2 a.m. and they have a silver eagle.
Well, I'm never up that late, Jason. I have responsibilities.
I think they show them in the afternoons too. Those types of commemorative coins,
right? And you're a lot of times in that case, you're buying it for the bullion, for the actual intrinsic value of whatever silver or gold they might be trying to market.
Gotcha.
That particular advertisement. Yeah.
So this one has Christopher Columbus on it. It was commemorative of his trip to the New World.
Sailing the ocean blue in 1492, yes. It has the three ships right on it. That's one of the reasons when I collect commemoratives, I like to have the historical information right on it. It
sure
reminds me of my poor memory of the players, and as in this case, the three ships that came over in the late 1400s. However, the coin right next to it, Jason, is that of issued by Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain, and you can actually, if you look closely, read their names on it. It was the coming together of two dynasties, and they pooled their resources, which is very common in the ancient world and in the medieval times, and to a large degree even today in certain parts of the world. The pooling of resources, the marrying of one power to that of another, when then, well, would bring unity and peace, and that's always a good thing.
Sure.
So that's the case in Ferdinand and Isabella's case. And this, of course, was issued by Isabella, who was the queen. And Ferdinand was the king, but he didn't have the authority. He didn't have the power. It was Isabella that commissioned Christopher Columbus to see what was out there, because we really did not know.
So Columbus probably sailed with a whole bunch of these.
Very, very possible, yes. Very possible.
Wow. Again, it's amazing first of all, it's amazing that we are lucky enough to have these types of artifacts. Again, to your point about, they go underground and they're lost for the ages, and then one day somebody finds them, and then again, just how that ties into our history and how it helps us to illustrate where we've been and what we've been through, and as not only as people, but as a faith. Mm-hmm. Especially, Christopher Columbus bringing Christianity to the New World by and large.
Right, right. And throughout the study of history and coin collecting, I mean, if you're a coin collector of anything other than recently issued monies, that inevitably you almost become a historian by extension.
Sure.
And you cannot help but get more interested in history and how dots are connected, what this led to that, and then that led to more things, and so forth and so on. So it's just an interesting to being a numismatist is a numismatic is a coin collecting, and a numismatist is a coin collector. But you, by way of extension, you can't help but become more interested in history. Like, for instance, this coin, which was issued in 1867 by the Vatican. And this is Pope Leo XIII, who had a long pontificate. And, of course, he called the First Vatican Council. Of course, they didn't call it Vatican I.
Sure.
But he called the First Vatican Council. And so, and of course, wrote in 1891, Rerum Novarum, one of the what is now characterized as the first social encyclical, because of the revolution that was taking place, and it was the Industrial Revolution, and about the rights of the individual, that they have a right to a decent wage and safety and respect and continuity in their work. And so,
again, going back to that idea that as individuals, as humans, we own the fruits of our labor as individuals, or right. that we should at least
right.
to some extent.
Yeah, and then God, of course, wants us to generously share our resources, that which is on loan from God, essentially, because we leave everything behind, last time I checked.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we do have a right. That's an inalienable right that we have as individuals. Getting back to the communism or most forms of socialism, don't have that basic respect for the individual rights of the person.
And really, I mean, up until the idea of the United States, the great experiment that we are, mm-hmm. That the idea that individuals were born with intrinsic value in and of themselves really didn't exist outside of, the extremely wealthy. You know, it was all in history. It was always the poorer folks didn't have that type of ability to control their value in society.
Right. They didn't have a reasonable say in the playing out of their government and preserving their rights and, well, thriving. I mean, God wants all of us to thrive. And now we're not talking egalitarianism here because all of us are given different gifts. That's how God has designed things. But we pool our gifts for the betterment of everybody. So there's a synergism that takes place by the pooling of our abilities and our treasure, our mammon, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, again, we definitely appreciate you coming. We're going to take another break. We'll finish up our conversation when we get back, and we'll ask you to give us a reflection on this week's coming gospel. We'll put you on the hot seat for a little while.
All right, my privilege.
Absolutely. Well, you're listening to Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. Again, if you're just tuning in, check us out on Podbean or iTunes Radio.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5.
Batter up. This night guarantees to knock it out of the park. On Monday, August 20th, Father Adam Cesarek, former Loras College baseball player, will be the key presenter for a community-wide renewal night. Slide deeper into your faith by learning how to strike a joyful and divine intimacy with God. You don't have to be a sports fan to catch inspiration from Father Adam's Grand Slam presentation. Game on! August 20th from 7 to 8:30 at Holy Trinity Church, Bloomington, a reception follows for all Jesus fans.
Hi, this is John Hall, president of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. With the summer months upon us, we've seen a decrease in giving to Catholic Spirit Radio. I'm coming to you today to ask you for your help in making up the shortfall and helping us advance this ministry. If you feel God is calling you to bless this ministry, we could sure use your help. Whether it's an extra $5 or $5,000, we could use your help and advance the ministry of Catholic Spirit Radio. You can donate online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com or via mail. Our address is Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Again, that's 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761, or online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Thank you from Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5.
We are back, Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. We are here with Father Sterneman of Holy Trinity Historic St. Pat's, and it's St. Pat's in Wapella also, right?
Absolutely.
That's correct. And we've been having a conversation. He was gracious enough to bring in some of his coin collection. If you ever get the opportunity to ask him about it, I would encourage it. It's a fantastic collection. Really helps, I think, to illustrate our faith from a historical perspective, something that I think a lot of times we forget, that we are called to live in this world. And to your point earlier, that God works through history and through people and through dynasties to bring about the salvation of his people, and that we're not devoid of that history as Christians, that we are a part of it. And so I can't thank you enough for bringing these artifacts in. It's a fantastic touchstone to some of those historical events, so I appreciate it.
It's been my privilege, Jason. One of the things that at least some of my parishioners know is that I bring coins out after the reading of particular gospel passages, as well as Old Testament. Like, for instance, I have an Antiochus IV, which is also known as Antiochus Epiphanoi, and he was the leader of the Seleucid Empire back at the time of the Maccabean Revolt, back in the 2nd century BC. And so when that is read from 1st or 2nd Maccabees, I will bring this coin out and say, this person actually existed. Here's a coin to prove it.
Wow.
And so you can actually read on here. And of course, it's in Greek, Antiochoi Epiphanoi, and it's, issued at his time that he did great violence against the Jewish people, and had, of course, the Jewish people, the faithful Jewish people, had a great disdain for him because of what he was doing. So just, it adds relevance.
Absolutely.
Again, it realifies.
Yeah, absolutely.
The reality of our faith, and in this case, our Jewish roots.
Well, speaking of gospel readings, I sprung on you before the break that we're going to put you on the hot seat and ask you to do the gospel reading from this Sunday. You had mentioned it's John chapter 6, which I think is actually kind of an easier one, right, to give a reflection on. I mean, it's chock full of really good stuff, I think.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Of course, it starts out with the multiplication of loaves and fishes, and then Jesus launches into what is characterized as the bread of life discourse, which Jesus is trying to impress upon his people, his profound love for them at that time, as well as us 2,000 years later, that he's truly with us in the flesh. You know, when you love someone, you want to be with them in the flesh. That's why we love the holidays so much, right?
Absolutely.
We yearn to get together at Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter and maybe even 4th of July.
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, yeah. The second most sacred Sunday of the year after that of Easter is, of course, Super Bowl Sunday.
There you go.
The Bread of Life discourse is very relevant to, of course, all Christians are invited to believe in that which Jesus speaks, and that is his true presence in the Eucharist, that he, of course, would confect at the Last Supper for the first time. And then from then on, we have access to God, which is an amazing thing. Speaking of the tangibility of that of history in the Eucharist, it's even more tangible. It's not a thing, it's a person.
Yeah.
And that's there's a huge relevance to coin collecting. We can go back to individuals and empires and events that took place that affected us today. And but when it comes to the Eucharist, which is roughly the wafer the size of what, a quarter?
Yeah.
That's not just a person that walked around 2,000 years ago. He continues to be in our midst 2,000 years later. And so he transcends time and space. He transcends history. The one who entered into history in the incarnation, the core belief, one of the core beliefs that we have as Christians. And so, yeah, that I'd like to read the gospel
Absolutely.
Passage and then give a short reflection. I've kind of already given it.
Well, that's all right.
The cat's out of the bag, as it were, Jason.
Well, and the beauty of our faith in the Catholic Church is we get a little bit, because we got a little bit of the bread of life this last Sunday.
Yes.
So it kind of goes on for 2 or 3 weeks,
it's
right?
Actually 5 weeks.
5 weeks.
And I mentioned that in my homily this past weekend, that every cycle B, which is predominantly Mark's gospel proclaimed in cycle B on Sundays, that we take a hiatus from Mark's gospel and we have the entire sixth chapter of John's gospel read for us and explained to us. And so 2 weeks ago, we started with the Bread of Life discourse. Then last week, we started Jesus, the preface, as it were, for that of the Bread of Life discourse. And then this past weekend, he started launching into it, and then he continues it here, almost ad nauseum, repeating over and over.
Well, he knew 2,000 years later some of us wouldn't get it.
That's right, and doubt, because you know that's what happens when we start putting limitations on God's power and love.
Yeah,
right. We don't believe that He's present, so we try to fill that void with all sorts of different things in our lives, and most of which are not healthy.
Sure,
only God can make our hearts have the peace and joy that He so earnestly desires for us to have.
Well, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, this is from John chapter 6, as we mentioned. A continuance of that of the Bread of Life discourse. Jesus said to the crowds, "I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever, and the bread that I will give is my flesh for the life of the world." The Jews quarreled amongst themselves, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" Jesus said to them, "Amen, amen, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you do not have life within you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him on the last day. For my flesh is true food, and my blood is true drink. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me, and I in him. Just as the living Father sent me, and I have life because of the Father, so also the one who feeds on me will have life because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. Unlike your ancestors who ate and still died, whoever eats this bread will live forever." And so we have this repetition of Jesus, our brother and Savior, on his part to really instill in our hearts and minds that he is truly present, that he's not just present for the ages, the historical event 2,000 years ago of his coming to earth for roughly 33 years, that he's truly present still. And because, once again, when you love someone, you want to be with them in the flesh. And so he goes so far as saying, if you fail to do this, if you don't believe in it, then you're not going to bother eating the flesh and drinking his blood, and therefore you don't have the life that God so earnestly desires for you and me to have. And so he's really impressing upon this. In fact, in 6:54, the verbiage to eat that he uses here, rendered, of course, by transliteration into English, that actually means to munch or gnaw. And so he means it literally,
sure,
not just figuratively. And in fact, interestingly enough, it'll be the latter parts of this month that we'll hear of many of his disciples no longer followed in his company. Interestingly enough, that's chapter 6, verses 66.
Oh, wow.
666, the number of the Antichrist, the denial of Christ, the one who denies the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, who does not enter into the seventh day, rest with the Father and intimacy with the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. So it's a threefold denial of the three divine persons.
You know, one of the things that I also think is interesting is that correlation between the manna in the desert. And I don't know if you can speak to that a little bit, because I would probably not do it justice. But, you know, that idea that God fed his people on actual bread, and Jesus talks about it. You know, when he says your ancestors ate bread, but they still perished.
Right.
You know, it amazes me, the foreshadowing from the Old Testament to the New.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, and again, I think that goes back to a lot of times why, when we're 2,000 years removed culturally, geographically, and so on from the Jewish faith, we don't, there's a ton of stuff I think we miss as Christians when it comes to that realization of what happened in history in the Old Testament and how beautiful and how really how much easier I think it is to understand a lot of the New Testament when you're able to make those comparisons.
Right. Well, Jesus is a historian, right? He is the Lord of history, transcends history. He's through whom the Father made the entire universe. And then, of course, as the incarnate one 2,000 years ago, he reaches back into his Jewish roots, into the original covenantal people, and he reminds them 1250 roughly B.C., 1250 B.C., with that of Moses, the original lawgiver, and Jesus being the new, that the Father provided sustenance for the hundreds of thousands of chosen people who were wandering through the desert towards their promised land of Canaan. And so we have this, Jesus promised, that he would give his flesh to eat and his blood to drink for our sustenance. Well, likewise, the Father in the covenantal people at the time of Moses fed his people by way of a bread-like substance that they would get off the floor of the desert. It doesn't sound real appealing.
Right.
They must have had to get in the sand out of there, right? But it was a bread-like substance that, and it was called manna, and it literally means, what is it? Well, that mystery then transcends, the 1,250 years and the Eucharist at the time of Jesus at the Last Supper that we have. What is it? Well, it's a mystery, right? It's a mystery of our faith, the greatest of all the sacraments that we then have now 2,000 years later. It goes beyond understanding, but it does make sense that when you love someone, you want to be with them in the flesh, and the new manna, the new bread come down from heaven is Christ himself, who not only has trinkets for our remembering, like coins, but he has his very self as a remembrance of his love and power that he so desires for us to receive and to know.
Awesome. Well, again, I so appreciate you coming and being with us today. I look forward to hopefully having you back in the future. It's been a very educational, rewarding experience. So, again, I thank you so much. I thank you for doing the gospel reading and for caring for the Catholics here in the local community.
Well, thank you, Jason. It's really been my privilege. Whenever I can share my coin collection and the importance of the relevance of history, it's certainly my privilege and my joy.
Well, I appreciate it. You're listening to Catholic Spirit Radio on 89.5. Again, check us out on Facebook, on Podbean, on iTunes Radio. You can find us on CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Thanks for being with us. We look forward to another conversation next week.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. Download our podcasts at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.